This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
New podcast for the start of February. February the 1st, the stretch drive upon us in the National Hockey League. Back to work for the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow night against the San Jose Sharks. 32 games to go. Jason Botchard is here. We're at practice. We're watching the Canucks. Who needs to practice when you're a red-hot juggernaut like the Vancouver Canucks? But practice they will until they start into the games again tomorrow night, San Jose and Minnesota in on Saturday. The PatCast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of the BC Hockey League's Coquitlam Express, and they're your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out weekdays or weekends in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or visit them online, eagleridgegm.com. We told you last week, tell you again, PatCast going on the road. We're taking the show on the road. We're going to do a PatCast late February during that league-mandated bye week for the Vancouver Canucks. We're going to do a PatCast live on location from the Eagle Ridge GM showroom. So we'll have some fun with that. Botchard, can you contain your excitement as they fire into the stretch drive here?
I can contain it. Yes, I can contain it. I'm not overly excited. It's coming to crunch time here for the Vancouver Canucks in terms of the quality of the opponent. I'm excited to see some really good teams and to see really how the Canucks match up, because for a while here, they've been bathing in credits. Everyone talking about how they're overachieving. It's been a lot of really positive stories about the team. Even Jake Virtanen is doing great now down in Utica. And Jim Benning was on 1040 yesterday and said, now Virtanen has got it. He's figured out the off-ice stuff. He was 228 when he went down there. Now he's 215. Why the hell does Jake Virtanen have to go to Utica to get into playing shape? I'm boggled. Like, I was on the Virtanen's weight is not right story back in September, and I remember going to Jim about it, and I said, like, when he first left junior and he first got to Utica for the first time, you guys, and he talked about it, you had him shed, he was around 230, you had him shed like 14, 15 pounds. That's what you told him. Now he's back to around 230. What happened? And he said then, look, we don't really care what weight he's at. You know, it's not really a big deal for us. And since we've learned that McCann in this offseason was told to bulk up, I do wonder how much of this is Virtanen, how much of this is the plan, but it did strike me as super weird that the GM is really happy that his main guy, the first big time guy that he acquired in a draft here in Vancouver, had to lose 13 pounds and he had to go to Utica to do it. When he's been in Vancouver from the end of the season, he was at Rogers Arena every day, 5 days a week, and he was here every day during the season until November 5th when he went down. I don't know, man. I just found that super weird. And the other thing that's was I had a, like, what WTF moment, what the fuck moment, was when it was presented to him how intense playoff hockey is. I think it was BMAC who said, you know, Ferraro was talking about what a change it was and how it opened his eyes being, you know, playing in playoff hockey and how crazy different it was from the regular season. And Jim said that it's the same thing in March. It's the exact same thing. So those two things really struck out for me here.
It wasn't March. It was late January. But from that, I'm to imply that the 3-0 loss in Arizona before the break was that was playoff hockey.
They said, you know, is this going to be a big thing to learn this intensity in playing playoff hockey? And he goes, no, he said it's the same thing in March and April when you're playing competitive games down the stretch. That's equal to playoff hockey, which I thought is great. Like, there's literally no comparison to the quality of hockey in March and April as compared to the playoffs, especially the first round.
When we look back, when all is said and done, you mentioned Virtanen, McCann, and obviously Trampkin and his weight too. Like, weight is going to be one of the stories of this 2016-2017 season. Now, I mentioned the loss in Phoenix or in Glendale just before the break. Since you and I last did this, Canucks marched through the front doors of the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado, and stuck it to the 30th place Avalanche with a late power play goal in the third period to eke out a victory there. But come on, Botch, like 10 years from now, going 28 minutes against one of the last place teams in a hockey, like that will make no sense. It took them half a game to get a shot on goal, and when they did, it was Alex Burrows clearing a puck the length of the ice while shorthanded to register the first shot. That was like, it was so unwatchable. Like, we could do like that 28 minutes without a shot could have maybe deserved its own podcast in and of itself. It was that bad. But like,
I heard people compare, like, you know, is this, was it worse than the Flames game right before Christmas? And then to me, it's like, you know, if you have a winter of January where it rains like 21 days in a row, you're saying like, is that worse than 3 years ago when it rained, you know, 20 days in a row? Like, they were both freaking awful. I tend to think that the Arizona game was worse because it was the Coyotes. It was the Coyotes. And the Canucks kind of changed. They had these weird dump-ins where they were trying to, like, keep the puck away from Mike Smith. Like, Mike Smith is this guy that's going to go. Like, they've basically owned the Coyotes. They have this great record over the years over the Coyotes. Like, why now are you worried about Mike Smith? You don't need to game plan for Mike Smith. Just play your regular game. He's going to get his plays in the corner, and he's going to turn it up from the other way. But guess what else happens? He makes mistakes, and they're turning into odd man rushes going the other way. And you know what happens then? You score goals. But more importantly, you get shots on net. And that didn't happen.
Scoring goals is such an issue for this hockey team. And I mean, I think it will catch up to them. I know that they've been good at grinding, and they've done a nice job playing this system that the coach has laid out for them. But there are good teams ahead here. Seven of the first eight out of the break are against teams that, you know, spent the All-Star break in the playoffs. I think by my count, 20 of the remaining 32 are against teams that were in a divisional playoff spot at the All-Star break. So, you know, the schedule is a beast. There's no question. And yes, they get Yannick Hansen back, and we all know you love Yannick Hansen. The team loves Yannick Hansen. I don't know if the coach necessarily loves Yannick Hansen, but how long can they grind for? Like, I guess that's the question. They want to believe they can continue to play these 2-1, 3-2 games. The lack of offense is going to catch up to them, isn't it?
Well, they are going to grow. Like, it's entrenched now. I think that there was a point earlier in the season when we had, like, there was an opportunity for them to kind of shift the kind of pillars of their game and change their approach and strategy. But it's in, now they believe. Now they're all in on grind it down, very few shots, quote unquote, low event hockey. That's the way that they're going to approach. That's how they think they got here. And that's how they think. I mean, it's, we talked about it last podcast, and that someone made like a t-shirt that Willie T-shirt Dan was wearing that said just here for the one point. Like, that is going to be, that should be their slogan in the locker room. Just win, baby, for the Raiders. Just here for the one for these guys. Just here for the Rouge.
But one's not going to get it done for them. Like, one will keep them in the mix for a little while longer. One gives them the chance to get two. Though that's the math, right?
You're going to tell, like, are you so sure that 82 points is not enough to get, like, 1 point a game is 82 points. Are you sure? You're telling me you're positive that that's not going to be enough this year to get into the playoffs in the Western Conference. I think that's what you're suggesting, you're probably right. I'm not convinced you are. I think 82 or 83 got Torts fired 2 years ago. I think now it may get you in the playoffs in the West.
Right, but my read on that slogan, just the one, is one gives you the chance to get two, right? If you get to overtime, you've guaranteed your one, and at that point, Now, maybe you take some chances. Because I don't think I don't think 82. I think Los Angeles, I think the Los Angeles Kings.
You'll get your wins sometimes. Sometimes you'll get your losses. Just average one. We just got to average one. That's the motto, man. That's what they're trying to do. And it may get them in, J-Pat.
I was looking at it last night. Like, I think LA gets in, although they don't score many goals either, but I just think there's enough there. They've got games in hand on everybody. I think the LA Kings get in. I don't know about St. Louis. They fire Hitch this morning. You know, is that going to wake them up? They are a terrible team. They're much like the Canucks. Like, they can't win on the road either. They are a surprise to me, though. I thought there was enough there in St. Louis with Pietrangelo, Shattenkirk, Parayko, Bomeister. Like, I thought there was enough there. I didn't see the goaltending issues. I don't know about the St. Louis Blues. So I don't know who gets that second wildcard team. They're all flawed. I think Calgary's got its issues, Winnipeg, Dallas, and so do the Vancouver Canucks. So something tells me that, you know, the Canucks will stay in this thing probably through the trade deadline if they're getting their single points here and there. But again, I and I've said it for a while, and I'm not alone. I just think that road record and the road schedule will catch up to the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and then we would head toward worst case scenario, which is they finish 9th or 10th in the conference, get a lower pick, and I don't care how many times Jim keeps saying that, oh, it doesn't matter. Anywhere we pick in the top 20, we'll be fine. I don't tend to believe that. I think that the higher pick, the better. Like, logically, that's how it's kind of worked out in the NHL. And I know a lot of people are going to point to, yeah, and it looks like Jim has had some picks later on. But none of these guys have made it yet, right? Like, Demko hasn't made it. Everyone's banking on Demko coming up and being this elite goalie. And I'm telling you right now, it is no sure thing. Like, you can't just believe, like, just because he was really great in the NCAA, it doesn't mean it's going to translate into him being a star goalie in the NHL. There's a long way to go for him. Could be years to go, could be 5 years to go.
I bring up the point that as much as I like everything I've seen from Demko, and it sounds like he's figured things out in his first year in Utica, and Brock Besser, you know, again, I like Besser. I want to see Brock Besser. But unless those two guys are so much better than their peers, like, every team has a pool of prospects that they're excited about.
That's right, yeah. And a lot of teams have a deeper pool. Like, you need a lot because some of them don't end up working out. Like, there are injuries. Some of them don't meet expectations. And, an issue we brought up last podcast, and I wrote about it on the weekend, was like, this gets to what the organizational approach should be. Like, should it be trying to squeeze the most you can out of the final Sunset Sedin years? Or should it be getting Horvat as many elite players as possible, as many weapons as possible, so that when he hits his peak from 23 to 27, he's got as many guys as they can possibly collect that have a chance at being elite players, so he can compete in the division against the best teams. Possibly, you know, you got to think it's going to be the McDavid years. Should that be more of a focus than where they are right now, which is quote unquote, make the playoffs and get younger? That's the rallying cry of the organization. I'm okay with that. Make the playoffs, get younger. You also need one more in there, get better. And I'm not sure that they're better now than they were 3 years ago.
Did you watch any of the All-Star weekend?
I was, you know, I watched here and there the game. Everyone know it sucked. It was as bad can be. So it was awful. It was really rough to watch, man. It was like, it was embarrassing. And then the Pro Bowl was awesome. Like, there were sacks and blitzes and, you know, guys were like one of the few where Pro Bowl games where everyone at least looked like they were trying. Yeah, they didn't give a shit in the NHL. Like, that was we're just gonna, you know, we've had a great weekend hanging around, drinking, seen a lot of the top 100 of all time, and we're just gonna kick up and chill here. Like, that was bad, man. Unwatchable.
I'm with you there, But I think for a guy like Bo Horvat, you wrote a little bit for him. You know, that's his coming out party, if you will, on the National Hockey League stage. And I thought the quote was pretty remarkable from him. And we know Bo Horvat. I mean, he's what you want in a player to, you know, sort of build around just in terms of on and off the ice. But for him to say, and I saw the quote, you know, about he was surprised that people knew who he was. And, you know, I don't think that he should have been necessarily, but until you're in that moment and you're walking the red carpets and you're walking into a locker room that's full of the best guys in the game, he certainly didn't look out of place on the ice, but I thought that was a kind of a cool moment for him to realize that maybe he has arrived in the NHL when everybody that's gathering for the All-Star weekend knows exactly who he is and what he's all about.
Yeah, I think, like, you have to go back to Horvat's draft year to really understand. Like, he was nowhere on anyone's radar at the beginning of that season. Like, he was the biggest climber out of anyone in that draft class. Like, there, I went through, you know, the top 100 prospects to watch at the beginning of the year, you know, many different lists, top 20, top 50. Horvat wasn't edging up on any of them to start that season. He was in like a super defensive shutdown role. Like, that was his job in the draft year in London. So he didn't have an opportunity to play those premier minutes in those premier situations that was going to enable him to get the pretty points that's going to kind of get all of this attention. So all of this, like, all-star stuff is new, because even when he was drafted, although it was ninth overall, it was, oh yeah, he's a middle six guy. Maybe if all goes right, he can be a top six center, never a number one line center, top six center. And here he is, 21, leads his team in points. He's got 32 points. I looked at the top 30 centers in average minutes per game. They're averaging out to 37. So he's right on the cusp right now at 21 in the third line role here with the Canucks of being a first line guy. So it kind of, like, even during the broadcast, when either Houston or Simpson, one of those guys said, well, you know, he can be like Pavelski. And they're not meaning he's going to have the snipe that Pavelski has or play exactly like Pavelski. The point was, he can put up points like Pavelski has. And if you go back and look at Pavelski's third season in the NHL, he had 40 points. Or first full season, he had 40. Horvat's first full season, he had 40. Horvat, though, doing it 2 years younger. Yeah, he can be that guy. He can be at 60, 70 at the peak, maybe get to point a game, possibly playing with the right guys in the right power play situation. I'm not saying he is going to be that, but for sure, no one can deny the potential is there for him to do that. And I'm really tired of hearing people say he can't be that. He can't be a first-line center. He can't do this. He has proven you wrong every step of the way. He's out, like, this is supposed to be one of the slow guys in the draft, this amazing 2013 draft that was supposed to be one of the deepest drafts that the league had seen since 2003. He was supposed to be the slow, you know, out of the top guys, the slowest guy. And there he was, in the fastest skater competition, finishing third and beating McKinnon, who is, like, really fast. So, he had a power skating coach, but a lot of dudes have power skating coaches. That doesn't explain how he was able to do it. So I was super impressed with all of that. And I totally agree with your premise that over the course of the weekend, he absolutely looked like he belonged, and he's just 21.
Imagine what he would have done or could have done if Johnny Hoggy had passed him the puck. I'm calling him Johnny Hoggy now because it was a one-way street. Horvat was passing the puck to Goodrow, but every time Goodrow had it, he just wanted to score. He didn't seem to want to give the puck back to Bo.
Yeah, he wanted, he must have had a bet with someone, took a prop bet or something. Like, Goodrow, man, like, out of anyone in that game, he was not letting go of that puck. And Horvat set him up, had some nice, it looked like his approach, I'm going to work on my assists. I'm going to work on my passing game, because he had some nice, some nice pucks right on Gaudreau's stick, that breakaway that Gaudreau kind of blew. So, I mean, out of a really shitty game and day, Horvat was one of the big highlights.
That, and he got his picture taken with Snoop.
That's right. Snoop, okay. The Crips, former Crips. went to prison. That's okay. That's cool. Skeeter, no. No Skeeter.
Beat the trade deadline with trade-in bonus days. Get up to $1,500 bonus on your new vehicle. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com. Full details, EagleRidgeGM.com. All right, so we've talked about Bo Horvat. And the last time on the podcast, I sort of floated the idea that I was ready to see Yannick Hansen, when he returned to the lineup, take Alex Burrow's spot on the right side with Sven Berchi. I saw that, you know, you're coming around on that. You're on board. You wrote a little bit there. Will he put the Knicks on it yesterday at practice? Yeah, no, he was asked about it, and he said that he likes Alex Burrow's on that line playing for the one. I wasn't here yesterday, so I don't know who asked the question. I heard the response. I did not hear the question. But somebody asked about Hansen and where he might play, and was it possible that they would look at putting him on Horvat's line? And Willie came back with he likes Burrows there, again, playing for the one.
Here's the question. Willie, Bo Horvat was at the All-Star game. He was in the fastest skating competition. He finished third. He was faster than McKinnon. Hansen is probably your fastest player. Have you ever thought about putting these two guys, like speed kills in the NHL? Have you ever thought what it would do to opposing defenses if you put these two together with Sven Berchi on a line? I want to see him respond to that question.
His answer would be, we've thought about it. He gives that answer a fair bit. We've thought about it, which is basically his way of giving you the middle finger.
We thought about it, but now Alex Burrows gives, what was it? And Alex Burrows, what? He gives too much. He's mentoring. What's Burrows? What does he say? Like, what's Burrows doing that's so impenetrable that that cannot be broken up?
He gives him that defensive presence.
Did he say that?
No, not yesterday. He did not say that, but he has said that in the past. I just worry because here's Bo Horvat. He looks like, you know, the barn door's been open, the horse is, he's on the loose, and I just don't know at this stage now. I used training wheels last week. Now I'm going into farm animals for my comparisons here, but it looks like Bo Horvat is ready to bust out of the barn, and I don't know if Alex Burrows can keep up here over these final 32 games.
Are you gonna ask about Hansen, or no?
I might. I wasn't here yesterday, so I can come in fresh, and I might float that question.
Not the way I said it though. Cause there are times when I'm going on the road next week, and there are times on the road now where it just ends up being me and Willie, and kind of, usually there's someone from Canucks.com recording in the background. He tends to be, there are moments, I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but I feel there are moments when he's more open in that occasion. I want to add like that question, that speed question, the way I just framed it to you. I'm going to ask him that when I'm on the road. So don't ask it that way.
All right, but and
you can ask it. Don't bring up the whole fastest skater.
Okay, I won't do that. But if you wait too long with these questions, when they get Hansen back, Butch, they are as healthy up front as they have been all season, save for Derek Dorsett. Like, there will be some bumps and bruises. Some guys are going to miss some games. Like, it's unbelievable to get to this stage of the season and have your full complement of forwards. I suppose Rodin, but I don't even figure Rodin factor him in here. Basically, they're a healthy bunch up front. There will be some injuries along the line. And so if you wait too long with your question, and I don't want to see Yannick Hansen get bumped out of the lineup again, but we know he didn't last the last time. Speaking of Hansen, did you see that? I tweeted out yesterday the goals scored by this team in the last 19 games. And
you want to go over that here on the podcast because that was pretty gruesome to see. I think on your list, if I remember correctly, Hansen was seventh? Or where did he rank?
Berchi led. He has seven in the last 19 games. The point I was making, though, Hansen was, I thought he was sixth on the list. He's ahead of Daniel. He has three goals. He's played three of those 19 games. He's in your top six goal scorers over the last 19 games. Because remember, he scored against Columbus, and then he had the two-goal game against Winnipeg, and we saw a little Sedinery from him there, and then he got hurt in that second Winnipeg game and hasn't been seen since. So, you know, can he pick up where he left off? I guess we'll find out. Looks like he's going to get plugged in on that third line, or is that I guess that's the second line. In my mind, that's the third line with Sutter and Granlund, but
legit second line. If you go by even strength playing time, and Sutter plays, I think he plays more than anyone. Like, it's actually the closer comp. Is the Sutter line the first or second line? It's definitely not the third. Horvat is definitely by any measure the third line. you can't just, you got to go by minutes played and how the coach uses them and how he deploys them. The third line is outscoring them, but that's the Sutter line is the second line for sure.
You talked about out on the road and the fact that sometimes it's just you and Willie D, and we know it. He's mentioned he likes your questions, so you guys get along. There's a little bond formed there, maybe some trust. But this brings us to the news of the week, Botch, and that is that the media circle shrunk again this week. And I went through it, and I hated to see Scott Rintoul get it this week. And you've worked with Scotty, and I've worked with Scotty, and there were departures from the newspaper as well. It sickens me that the circle is just getting so much smaller on an almost daily basis. And that's why when you're out on the road, it used to be a couple of beat writers and others. And now you can, spend time on your own one-on-one with Willie D. But, I had a good chat with Scott. I will say this, and this isn't out there yet, but I guess it will be now. With Scott's departure, I've been asked to return to the post-game shows for the rest of the season. And I had a good chat with Scott about it, and he understands, and I've got a family to feed. And so I have said yes, that I'll, that's what I love doing is talking hockey. And so, I hate that it comes at the cost of Scott Rintoul's job, but I will be returning to the post-game show with Blake. So I do look forward to that. But again, just another dismal day in this business in this city on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was gutted to hear the, I know Scott pretty well. I spent 2 years doing morning radio with him. I was gutted when it happened to you, and I didn't really have a personal relationship with you, but I know that there are people who do a really good job. There's not, it's not overwhelming to me from my point of view. Not everyone does, but I have you on the list. I have Scott on the list, having worked with him for that long, I know, the guy is insanely prepared. There is nothing you can come up with on any sport that would surprise him. And I'm at least happy that the people seem to have some fond memories for the show we did. It could have been different. When I got there the first week, and I remember thinking, it's always going to be grounded in sports because that's always going to be Scotty's center. Everything is going to gravitate back to there. So I can go talk about crazy other stuff. DeBron could talk about crazy other stuff, and Scotty would always inherently know when to bring it back. And I remember, the first week, one of the big topics that came up was, there was some note about how smart pigs were, and I wondered, would they be smart enough to outsmart me in a fight, and could I fight a pig? And to which DeBron said what he really wanted, one of the things he wanted to do in life was to wail on a pig, beat the crap out of the pig, and then say to the pig, "How do you like me now, college boy?" it was incredible to me. It was hilarious, and it started this whole animal fighting bit that I still get. There's a few things people ask me about the Thornton quote. They ask me about the Bravies, and they ask me about, animal fighting, which was a 2011 bit. And I thought it was really this thing is going. We're really off to something, onto something here, because it got a huge reaction and it carried on for a week or 10 days until eventually the bosses came down and said, no, you can no longer an edict went out. You can no longer talk about animal fighting. So the bosses were always trying to rein us in, and I felt it kind of hurt the show because Scotty would do that naturally. He had this natural talent of being able, when things got too far, to keep them in the sphere that they needed to be, so you would have the right amount of sports talk and the right amount of talking about animal fighting or whatever else that DeBron or me were going to come up with. I am worried about the media landscape here. I am worried about the number of voices that are out there asking questions. I don't think it's a job that just anyone can do. I've seen a lot of people, come here, try to do it, be here, try to do it, that I don't think are effective. I think that there is an art to analyzing and talking about the what if. I'm not saying it's impossible for others to do, but I know Scotty is really freaking good at it, man. And he was one of the most, if not the most knowledgeable guys He was, and he is. He was the most knowledgeable guy at 1040. To me, he should be on the air. He should have his own radio show, and he should be the straight guy with all of the news and all of the topics and bang on every single fact. And he should have the guys with the crazy theories around him, whether it's one or two others. And I think that if you do that and have that recipe, you would have a great radio show. So to see it happen to him, I was heartbroken. And like I said, I was gutted. People wanted me to respond on Twitter, but it was very difficult for me to respond without being super negative, you know, of the station, of what happened. And so I'm trying not to be overly critical, but man, it sucks.
Well said. And again, I went through it myself. I know, and it does suck. Trust me, it sucks. And it is such a strange time in the business right now. And that's why, you know, again, I love talking hockey, and so the opportunity has presented itself to be part of the post game. Who knows where it goes from here, but for the rest of this season, I'm going to jump at that opportunity. Won't change the podcast. You and I will continue to do that on a regular basis, although things changing at a ridiculous rate at the newspaper, too. And let's hope that the podcast survives. I mean, I think we're onto something here. Get lots of good feedback on the podcast. But and really, I mean, when you look at it, and again, I have no doubt that Scott Rintoul will get some opportunities. But with this shrinking circle, I mean, he's been in TV, he's done radio, you know, you just don't know where that next door is going to open, and I hope it opens quickly for him. But something like the podcast was spawned out of what happened 15 months ago. So, you know, I think you do have to get a little creative, and Scott's a creative guy, and so I look forward to finding out what's next for him. I hope I get a chance to work with him again, because not everybody in the business is a good guy, but Scott Rintoul certainly is. And with a young baby, second child just weeks ago, you know, it's got to be added levels of stress. You know about the parenting thing, and so do I. So nothing but the best for Scotty. And also, I got to say, you know, Jonathan McDonald was a big part of bringing me into the province mix and the opportunity I had there and continue to have there. And so I was sad to see him go. Howard Samura, Mark Weber. Again, I don't know if you were in your office, but it's crazy the number of people that said goodbye to the province in the Sun yesterday.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, for these people, they willingly you know, they're leaving. I mean, they're it's not something that that's being taken away from them. They're at a point in their careers where they want to take on new adventure, new opportunities. They've taken a buyout and they're moving on. And yeah, I mean, of course, like, I love province sports, obviously. Like, I bleed for province sports. So to see it without Howie, to see it without Weebs, to see it without J-Mac, it's extremely tough for me, but I still think it can be great. You know, I still think that there's enough people, you know, if I were to come from another place, Toronto, and I was, you know, to come to Vancouver, I'm going to take over the Vancouver sports scene. I'm going to start up a website. I would do it with like three or four or five guys. Like, that's what I would bring. There's still six guys in province and Vancouver Sun Sports. I think that they all bring different qualities. They're all really good. And, I think it has a chance of being super successful still. So, although it hurts, we still have the numbers to have a great product.
All right, let's finish up with this news that's been out there for a little while, but it's getting closer and closer. Sounds like it's on the Players Association plate now to approve preseason hockey in China for the Vancouver Canucks and the LA Kings next season. Are you on board? You ready for a 15, 18-hour flight to cover preseason hockey?
I'm not. I can't even think about, like, I did a 30th anniversary of the Summit Series in Russia, and it was like a 30-hour trip to get there. So I'd be surprised if it's like 15 hours to get to someplace in China. I would suspect it would be a bit longer than that, probably. But bring it on. Like, how do you think that would impact the Canucks? Would they just they'd get off to a slow start? Or would they just say, you know what, guys, it's because, I mean, is it another excuse built in to have low expectations? Like, the rally, like, one of the things about the organization there is get the expectations low and then you're always above the bar. So I feel like part of me thinks that they're signing on to China to say, like, if the season starts poorly, to be able to say, look, yeah, we did get off to a slow start. We lost 7 of 8, but man, we were in China.
remember the first, well, they won their first four this year. And then as it started to stop, remember fatigue became an issue like 2 weeks into the season. 2 weeks into the regular season this year, fatigue. All of a sudden, we heard a lot about fatigue. So what would it be traveling from the other half of the world to play two preseason games? Like the Twins, up until the final preseason game this year in Edmonton, under Willie D, had never traveled in the preseason. They had never played a road preseason game. But because they were at the World Cup and they had Louis Erickson and they wanted to get them some game time, they went to Edmonton, a one-hour flight. So, but if you're
they requested to go so they could see Rogers place, I'm sure.
They'd probably watch the documentary, but to see it in person, I suppose. But no, I mean, if it's about selling the game, you have to think, you know, it's a couple of games, you'd take a full roster and, you know, it would be your big game, big names. Like, I think the Sedins would have
everyone's to be. Go. Yeah. If it's in China, everyone's going. There's no, we're leaving the Sedins behind. There's no chance.
All right, as we finish up here, I have to, I took some heat last week. I always find that, you know, we do the podcast and people are listening and then they come at me and JD was upset with me, because I couldn't remember who I had been talking to when we talked about Reed Boucher last week and Willie saying that he didn't really know what he had. And I mentioned like there are game tapes and film and all that kind of stuff. And JD pointed out that that was a conversation that we had had at a game, he and I, and I think he thought that I was like pilfering his good material for the podcast. And he came at me, and he came at me hard on Twitter. Really? Oh, yeah, DMs.
Twitter?
Yeah, like multiple DMs.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I people tell me stuff all the time, and it becomes mine. Like, if you tell me something, let it be known that I may take this and make it my own. Like, what you say to me, if you're talking to me, like, even you, last week, you said, you know, you came up with the Hanson playing with horror. I made, like, all of a sudden.
Oh, I saw that. I noticed.
That was mine. And I tweeted out Hanson with Horvat and Berchi on the same line. Who says no? And I got, like, an amazing number of responses, 35. And a lot of people, this is a great idea, man. I'm so glad you came up with this. And I took all the glory, and it made me... I have more energy today because of the glory I took from you by putting that out there.
Well, that's why I had to tweet back at you. Oh, somebody's listening to the podcast because...
Yeah, but even that was... I was glad you said it that way because even that was muddy. Like, a lot of people who hadn't listened to the podcast would still have no idea that it was actually your idea that I had pilfered, and now I'm presenting it as my own.
So there you go, JD. Your stuff is my stuff. Your stuff's my stuff. Welcome to the PatCast. That's going to do it for this week. PatCast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone's a part of their hockey family. Check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. The stretch run upon us, 32 to go for the Vancouver Canucks starting on Thursday against the San Jose Sharks. We'll be back to PatCast again next week here on Province Radio.